Welcome to the GOGcast, brought to you by Mad Cats, all about the game, an XSplit broadcaster, simple yet powerful, live streaming and recording. And now, your host, Leah.
To another Girls on Games podcast. This is episode number 99.
Wayne Gretzky, baby. Woo!
Yeah, that's right. So, we're running up onto episode 100. It's coming. Here's the dealio, though. We got something happening next week. So, for episode 100, we got an interview. And that means we can't do something special. So, we're going to do it at episode 101. How do you guys feel about that? Kat, Simon, Allie?
I mean, 101 is just as good as 100, so that works.
Is there going to be Dalmatians?
It's one better than 100.
Exactly. That's exactly.
If there's 101 dogs, I'm there.
There you go. All them Dalmatians. So yeah, as you can hear, I've got the crew hanging out with me here today. Kat, how you doing?
I'm good. Yourself?
Very good. Simon?
Top shape.
And Allie?
Very good.
So yeah, 101 is coming up. 100's coming up, 101's coming up. So we're thinking about doing something, bringing back the live show on Twitch. Yes, maybe. So yeah, stay tuned for that. We might do something where you guys can get in on the action that is the GOGcast. I hope you had a wonderful week. As you can hear, I don't sound like death warmed over anymore. I have my voice back.
Leo is back.
FM voice. When I was editing last week's, I was like, ouch, I sound crappy, and I just got progressively worse as the week went on. Today's the first day that I've really like gotten back into the groove, so I'm excited to be here hanging out with you guys. It's a good way to get back in the saddle, as they say. We've got a great episode for you, including two sick interviews, one with Colin from Asus and Republica Gamers. You know them, they have computer hardware companies.
Asus, we're gonna be talking. Great company, great, by the way. They're very nice.
So we're going to be talking about esports in Canada and the stuff that they do. Plus, we've got another interview with Stuart Chatwood. You might recognize him as the bassist from The Tea Party, but he is also a composer for video game music soundtracks, and he recently did the Darkest Dungeon soundtrack, which is awesome. I love that soundtrack.
What an awesome name, Stuart Chatwood.
Like, I know, it's great. He's so a rock star. Sick. He's got such a cool rock star
Honestly,
name.
Is it his real name or is it a rock star name?
That's his real name.
Sack.
I know.
Is he British?
No, he's Canadian.
Yeah, they're all Canadian, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think he's based in Toronto. Maybe float between Toronto and BC, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's a tea party. We love our Canadian rock bands. All right, but before we jump into all that fun stuff, what games you be gaming, Kat?
Like I said last week, I relapsed into Skyrim. Can't stop, won't stop.
I mean, relapse is just
Slinging
kind of such a strong word for it.
It's an addiction, yeah.
It is. Yeah, I've been playing like every night nonstop. It's to the point where I had to switch to a controller because my wrist is killing me. The carpal tunnel.
Wow. Did you find that hard?
Shame.
Yeah.
The transfer's difficult?
It's not a great game to play with a controller. I'm going to be honest. After playing it for PC for... there's a lot of shortcuts missing. Like, every time I want to open the map, I got to go B and then hit the stick down to open the map. As in, it's like when you're playing with the keyboard, it's just you just hit M. You know, you hit J. There's not enough things on the controller. Like, actually controlling the character is not bad, but just, like, I'm so used to hitting 1, 2, 3 for all my shortcuts for my configurations, from going from my bow to my swords to drinking a potion to switching between my shouts. It's just like it's so seamless.
Well,
with the keyboard.
There's one thing you could do, which would be to get good. I've thought about that.
Gloves dropped.
It's not a question of skill. It's a question of this position all day, every day. What I work with.
I
one
do
hand,
it. I don't complain.
That sounds like weakness talking.
You gotta
Catherine.
Get good, Kat. I mean, it's just
I know
like...
a good doctor if you need carpal tunnel.
Well, I'm gonna need it because the thing is, I'm a graphic designer.
I mean, she's getting the burn warrant after I just burned her, so that's what she's getting.
I'm a graphic designer by day, and I point and click with the mouse all day. I don't use a tablet. I use the mouse. That's how I do it. And I can't play games with a mouse anymore because then it just kills my wrist. So yeah.
That sounds like a lot of defeats for no reason, but whatever.
Yeah, it's either that or I convince my bosses to buy me a Wacom tablet and they switch.
Dude, I'm on my ass with my mouse and keyboard. Anyway, whatever. We're rambling.
Yeah. You are rambling.
I know. Shut up, Simon.
Yep. Sorry. You are rambling. And so I've been playing a lot of Skyrim. Not great with a controller. And I'm playing Fire Emblem Heroes on my phone.
You like it?
I'm enjoying it. It's giving me the itch for a new Fire Emblem game, to be honest.
That's cool.
I was reading quickly on the upcoming one for the 3DS, which is Shadows of Valentia, which is set in this universe of a previous one. I forget the name. But essentially, it's said that there's going to be... It's a bit like Assassin's Creed Syndicate. There's going to be two heroes, a guy and a girl, and their stories are going to be like parallel.
Oh, that's cool.
So you're going to switch between the two. So I'm super excited. So now all I can think about is Fire Emblem and Skyrim.
I guess it's doing what Nintendo kind of wanted it to do, in that it's provoking you to want to go back and play another Fire Emblem game. Something else. Like, it's almost like advertisement for a AAA game through a mobile game, which Pokemon Go did for me.
And also rack up millions of dollars in microtransaction.
That too. Simon. Go ahead, Allie.
Sorry, I was just saying, I was thinking about it on the bus ride home. I felt bad about how quickly I forgot about Fire Emblem Heroes. I have played so many mobile games from Japan that are in the typical hero collection style, where, you know, and it's pretty much the same combat, to say that in air quotes. One of my favorite games was Chain Chronicles, and Fire Emblem Heroes feels pretty much exactly the same. But I don't know. I hope maybe it'll expand. Like, I hope it'll grow a little bit more and kind of become its own thing, like self-sufficient, you know what I mean? Like, not just a springboard for wanting to play the 3DS games.
Yeah, well, I think also the big draw is with Hero Collection, it's collecting heroes that you love, like, you know, Marth and Crom. And
that's definitely where the microtransactions are going to come in their favor.
Yeah, because you need to spend a lot of orbs to get that chrome that falls like in a small percentage.
Yeah, I was reading today that apparently even if you spend $1,000 in microtransactions, there's still not 100% chance that you're going to be getting every single hero.
I read that too.
Yeah, that's I didn't read the whole article. Man. Yeah, I didn't read the whole article in depth, but I saw that and I was like, oh no, this is a bad idea.
Yeah. Take my credit card away. Take it away. Simon, the
Hello.
Man with the burns.
Hello.
What's going on? What are you playing?
I've been playing some Stardew Valley again.
Oh,
not
yeah?
Everyone stopped playing it. I don't know. Started over. I don't know why. It's I needed. I got really tired at work and stuff. So I just needed a game to just like go in and start and just relax. And it's been pretty wonderful, actually. So
is it your first time playing with the new maps?
Yes, actually, I chose the fish map because I love fishing. So yeah, it's been really fantastic. I'm loving it so far. I know they made a couple changes, I think too. I think they made some quality of life changes because I feel a lot of the gripes I had it when I first started playing, I don't feel them anymore. Maybe I'm going crazy, but I don't know.
It's either that or you know how to play the game.
Maybe. No, I'm just having a really good time, and it's. It's pretty fantastic. Playing a lot more Overwatch also lately. I don't know why. I got really into the... I love the Rooster update. And Capture the Flag is really fun.
Apparently it's staying.
It's... Yeah. It's really, really fun. I'm loving Capture the Flag. I hope they keep it as a... Well, now that they're going to add server browsers, like, they're going to have Capture the Flag servers. You can feel free to move that pause. Yeah, now that there's going to be a server browser, you'll be able to make your own Capture the Flag server. So, I don't know. So, yeah, Overwatch, Stardew Valley, and some other games here and there, but those are the main two, really.
I've been hearing a lot about that game Neo or something, and like yes. drawing back to Dark Souls and Bloodborne and
yeah,
stuff. And I was
I'm,
thinking of you. I'm like, is that one that you want to jump on?
I do. I probably eventually will. Is it out on Xbox or just PS?
No, just PS4.
Yeah, my PS4 is like, I don't know. I don't want to kind of want to buy games on it just yet because I don't know how long it's going to last me. I'm just hoping it lasts me long enough so that Destiny 2 comes out, but...
It's okay. You can play that on Xbox.
No,
me.
I mean, I probably will play it on Xbox, but right now, if I need a Destiny fix, I have it on PS4, so... Yeah.
Well, you don't have to wait much longer. Destiny 2 is confirmed to be coming out this year.
Yeah, November 2017.
Are they releasing the full game at once this time?
Oh,
probably
burns.
Not.
Oh, you can't see Kat's face, but she's doing a, oh, that's a burn face.
I mean, it's probably going to be the same thing. There's going to be Destiny and then, like, a couple of content. The saddest thing about this is that we won't be able to import your characters, so.
Well, there's like discussion about that right now because they heard the community. We don't think we're going to be able to bring everything over, but there might be something going on. Like, we might not lose our guardians completely.
Well,
which would be nice.
The case, though, it's not such a bad thing if Simon decides to jump from one console to the other.
No, I mean, for Simon, it's not a bad thing, but I mean, for someone like me who has spent hundreds of hours creating a connection and like a sentimentality with my character.
Oh, good. How about you, Allie? What have you been playing?
I'm liking Final Fantasy Fast and the Furious Edition much better than I thought I would. It's got a lot of pretty boys in it, which has been amusing for me. No, I'm actually really, really surprised at how much I'm enjoying it. I kind of bought it on a whim. I was thinking about it, and then I was just like, you know what? I just hit buy, and I got it. And I don't regret it at all. Like, I'm about 40 hours into the game so far, I want to say, 30 or 40 hours. And I'm, like, not even done 5 chapters out of 13, I believe. Because there's so much to do, so much to explore. And the story is really interesting so far. So, do recommend. It's a very different Final Fantasy, and when you first boot up the game, it tells you a Final Fantasy for the fans and for newcomers, and I really do feel like that's what it is. Like, it's a refresh of the series, just because the last couple of titles have been a little bit, you know, mediocre by most fans' standards. So I think that this is taking the series in a better direction. And I would really like to see like an old school Final Fantasy story, like Final Fantasy IX, but in like this style of gameplay and like this scope of environment and world. I think that'd be kind of cool. But yeah, that's what I've been playing kind of nonstop.
from the little that we know about 7 Remake, I think that's what they're going with.
Yeah, the whole episodic thing is a little bit confusing for me for Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah, but of course it is, because they want to make as much money out of it as possible. So.
I think they also want to get it out as soon as possible in pieces, and that's an easy way to do it in chunks.
Yeah, that just makes me worry too. Like, how long are we going to have to wait? Like,
that's it.
A couple years.
That's a big game.
It is a big game. I don't know. I'm excited. We should be getting more information about that soon. Hopefully,
you would hope. It's being done here in Montreal.
That's been 2 years.
I know.
Maybe oh my god!
Didn't they like just started working on it or something?
Well, that the developer that's opening here, that's working on it, they're only just opened here, so I guess they just started. But they have to be working on it for a bit. They had to like do all the pre-planning stuff. Do you know what I mean? And that's a lot of legwork.
I'm sure some of the work was done in Japan prior.
We shall see. I haven't been playing much because, yeah, like I said, sick. And have you guys ever been that sick that you don't even have the energy to pick up a controller?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Like, that sick. Like, Monday, I stayed on the couch and I had all intentions of, like, watching Netflix and just, like, lying there playing Poochie and Yoshi's Woolly World. Couldn't even do it. So yeah, I'm hoping this weekend, though it is LAN ETS weekend, but I'm hoping to get a little bit more game time in. I mean, I feel bad. I didn't get very far at all in the Ghost Recon Wildlands beta, closed beta. I feel sad. I did that big download and got 20 minutes and that was it.
Well, there's an open beta coming, so.
That's good.
Yeah, at least you'll have a little bit more of an opportunity there.
As long as I'm not playing other things at the same time.
Good point.
All right, let's take a little pause there. And when we come back, some news. Time to find out what's going on in the world of video games with some news stories. Kat, what do you got for me?
Well, I'm still talking about Nintendo.
That's okay.
You're a fangirl.
Yeah, but this time it's not about the Switch. It's about the 3DS, which is almost unbuyable at the moment.
What? Unbuyable? Yeah.
I saw an article on The Verge that says Nintendo new 3DS XL stock issues sold out. And they're like, forget about the Switch. You can't even buy a new 3DS. And I was like, that sounds like a load of horse shit. So today, February 9th, I checked Canadian stocks.
Okay.
On Amazon.ca, third-party sellers are selling it at higher prices. Best Buy, the black and red XLs are available to order online. Okay. I checked all the stores in the area. They have no stock.
Whoa.
Toys R Us has no stock online and in nearby stores. And EB Games has the red XL online only, no stock in nearby stores.
Where the hell are all the 3DSs?
So, just personal note, I had, like, this affects me personally because I wanted to get a 3DS for my fiance for Christmas, and I started looking a month in advance. No stock anywhere.
But hold on. Didn't they have 3DS bundles and stuff Christmas time?
There was none in stock anywhere, and it was only two weeks after Christmas that we ended up buying one, and we got it from somewhere in the States and for more than it should have been listed. Because at that point, the desperation was so real.
I think if you didn't buy it, if you didn't buy the Black Friday bundle that they came out with, or pre-ordered the Pokemon one, it's just like you couldn't get one. And they're already sold out of the pre-orders for the Pikachu.
Yeah, those lasted about, I think, all of 2 hours, if that. Because I went on the Best Buy page as soon as those pre-orders went up, just to check it out. And it was crazy how fast it was gone.
Wow. Yeah.
So the NES Classic sold out and Nintendo was like, we didn't realize you guys wanted this thing so bad. But what about the new 3DS XL? What about your bread and butter? What about something that you have sold, like, if you count all the 2DS and the 3DS family, it's like 62 million units worldwide.
Nintendo knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
When did the new 3DS come out? It wasn't last February. It was the February before that, wasn't it?
The XL has been in North America for almost 2 years, I think.
Yeah. Well, now it'd be over 2 years because it was February 13th was the launch day. I remember that. So yeah, it wasn't last year. It was the year before that. Holy crap. That doesn't bode well for the Switch. Like, it doesn't have... Give me any faith in stock of the Switch.
No, the Switch, the pre-orders are already gone.
And some pre-orders are being canceled on people now because certain stores are accepting numbers higher than they should be. And there's actually, I forget if it was GameStop or another retailer, but there's actually a message on the Switch pre-order page that says, hey, we've reached our maximum number of units, but pre-order now to guarantee yourself in the next wave. And I, hands down, don't believe that should be allowed to happen.
No, that sounds terrible.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Nintendo really needs to get their act together. And I don't like the fact that people are standing up for them going, well, you know, a lot of people want to buy their products. Then make more of your products.
I mean, we didn't get issues buying our day one PS4 and Xbox Ones.
No, there was no problems.
I mean, at one point they ran out of pre-orders, and then a week later they guaranteed more stock, and they just made more consoles. Yeah. I mean, some people had to wait an extra day for the day one order. Not everybody got it day of, but eventually everybody got a console within 3 days of the launch.
You don't need to generate perceived demand when the demand is already there.
Yep. Wow. So that's my Nintendo news. Like, let's forget about the Switch, man. What about the 3DSs? What about the best, one of the best consoles available on the market right now that is fucking sold out everywhere?
It's also like a little bit, it's making me a little bit nervous too. Because they keep saying that they're going to be continuing to support the 3DS, but this is not, like, this is not a reflection of what they're saying.
Yeah, I feel ya. That
Kat, didn't we talk about that last week too? I feel like we talked about the story about people's pre-orders being canceled. We talked about them saying that they were going to, you know, protect the and keep supporting the 3DS, but this doesn't bode well.
No, I mean, we talked about last week about all the games they announced, about the fact that there's 62 million units worldwide being used and being played, about how it's a great console, about how it's a good value and it's a safe value and it's an amazing console, and now you can't buy it anywhere. So it's just, did they say they were going to support it as in they're still going to make software, but is the hardware gone?
I don't know. It's making me really
nervous.
You just
added the Amiibo support. Why are they gone? Where are the consoles?
It makes me nervous. Like, if, well, obviously if you want one, but if like your console breaks or you lose it or something, you can't replace it. That's annoying.
That is annoying, unless they have some hidden units somewhere for warranty purposes.
We shall see. Allie, you got some news stories here going on. What's up?
So the title of this news article from Polygon is FIFA Ultimate Team YouTubers to Pay Steep Fines for Violating UK Gambling Laws. So this happened a couple months back. Some YouTubers got in trouble for basically running an illegal gambling site in the UK using the esports, EA Sports FIFA in-game currency to bet on real-world football matches, soccer matches. they were cracked down on, and this quote says, in what is believed to be the UK Gambling Commission's first video game-related prosecution, two Britons have pled guilty to operating an unlicensed gambling website. So this is kind of interesting, because this kind of ties into what we're seeing with CSGO and skins.
I read this story too, and one thing that I think that they really jumped in on was the fact that they didn't make it 18 plus, and I think that's where they really, you know, had to have the crackdown.
Yeah, probably. And I mean, the fact too that like the Gambling Commission has no hand in it, had no control, and was probably not getting a cut of anything that was going on. So that's a big no-no, as we in Quebec know all too well, because our Lotto Quebec thing is very...
God, this is the worst. You cannot have a contest without
putting so those in it. Just for, like, background info, every time there's a really cool contest that you see on Twitter and Facebook, it's always excluding Quebec, because we can't have anything
Quebec.
Nice.
Excluding Quebec.
Yeah, we know all about those rules, especially Kat and I, from working at the radio station. So, yeah, the Quebec Lotto, it's supposed to protect us, the winners, or us, the contestants. But sometimes, because of the way it's done, if there's a Canada-wide contest, they often say it's too much work to comply with the Quebec laws. So they just say, not in Quebec.
It's because they don't want to pay the taxes. Because if you win in Ontario, like you win a car, you pay the car's taxes, but not in Quebec. The people that give the car have to pay the taxes to the government to hold the contest. So it protects us, but at the same time, we don't get no contest.
Yeah, it's still a big bummer. And they kind of seem like party poopers. But anyways, this is kind of...
It's a government body. Of course they're party poopers.
Bunch of fun suckers. So yes, that's the real reason why I'm moving to the United States. Contests.
Now we
and
know.
And to finally see what a hospital bill looks like.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, wait, Trump.
Aren't you scared of that?
Oh, no. Okay, now let's not talk about this
party here.
No, it's okay. But yeah, so I think this is like, this is setting an interesting precedent now. Like, this has happened. Like, people have been charged or have been found guilty in video game / gambling related incidents. Like, this is, now there's like a case that people can refer to. You know what I mean? When things start going on in North America. So I think it doesn't affect me because I don't take part in any of this kind of stuff. But I think it's really interesting to look at from the outside.
We'll end up seeing more stories of this sort now.
Yeah.
Where cases come down and there are verdicts that are, you know, that kind of thing. And they, like you said, there's things that they can go back and reference to. Might not be in the same country, but they can use it as an example.
Well, you know, just like when Valve decided that it was cracking down on CSGO skin website, they just sent like a lawyer letter to every one of those sites and be like, you are shutting down operations or we will see you in court. And every single one of those sites shat their pants and just like shut down immediately. So it's because like you're using someone else's quote unquote money to like make yourself some money. In a kind of shitty way to like promote gambling with children and stuff. I don't know. It's just, it's weird.
It's interesting. I'm excited to see, well, not excited. That makes me sound really mean, but I'm interested to see what happens in the future and how this might affect, like I said, skins in CSGO, etc.
Simon, what do you got for us?
I saw something interesting, and it's that E3 again this year will be open to the public. That's actually pretty interesting because like for the longest time, like it was almost the only really like video game, I want to say it's not really a convention. Like, would you call it a convention or is it just really like
an event?
It's an expo.
An event.
Yeah. It's an exposition to show off the wares of the video game companies.
Like, but before the PAXes of this world and that kind of stuff, it was pretty much like the only one. So, and you know, it got so popular that they had to close it. And now they're opening it back up to consumers to buy tickets to go see E3. I think personally, in a desperate attempt to keep relevant, because clearly, you know, people love watching, going to the, like I said, the PAXes and all the other like GDC and like all the other actual gaming expo, which is like just like a big show and a big thing. I mean, E3 still has its prestige, kind of like you girls went a couple years ago, so like, you know, it's always kind of a cool event. But I don't know, I mean, it's interesting to see that they're opening to the fans again, but how really good is it going to be? Yes, Allie, we pointed at you.
I think it's good. I think it's nice. I think that people want the experience of going to E3 because E3 has always been so, like, it's been the epitome of like video game news and releases. So like everyone who's a gamer wants to experience that. They want to be part of that, which is cool. But even though it's open to the public, I think people should know that E3 does not equal fan event.
Yes.
You know, it is still first and foremost, like Leah said, it's an exposition versus PAX, which is a convention. It's like for the fans. The content is curated for fans. It's set up in a way for fans to enjoy things. So I like people are, you're going to enjoy yourself nonetheless, right? Because you're surrounded by people who are into the same things as you are. The energy is great. But I mean, it's not the same type of thing. And I mean, the idea of having, I don't know if like they are cutting down on industry presence and like, you know, part of that 15,000 tickets that are going to be available is going to be taking up, you know, industry bodies that were there last year, or if it's going to be an additional 15,000 people. That's a lot of people.
Here's the thing. E3 is seeing, obviously, some game companies pull out, right? Because it's not reaching its target audience, or its target audience is going elsewhere. They're seeing a change in the media industry. The fact that people are listening to us, going to YouTube, podcasts, Twitch streamers, all that kind of stuff, who are not traditional media, do not necessarily get access to something like E3. By opening it up to consumers, mind you, just the exposition floor, gives those types of folks the chance to go in, the smaller streamers and people who are not traditional media, to give them a chance to be able to play something that is brand new. Now, what you're not going to see is people having access to the press conferences, because the press conferences are only media, unless there's a chance that a certain company decides to open their space up to more people. We know that Catherine's and I've sat through the Xbox and the PlayStation press conferences. They are in huge venues that are usually full, like completely full. And I know, Allie, you've sat through it too. It's a big space. But like stuff like the Ubisoft one, they're super limited because their venue is a tiny theater.
Not anymore.
So they're not anymore?
No, they opened it up bigger last year. It was also a fan event.
Oh,
for at least a portion of it.
The year that we went, it was like one person could go of the two of us. And we're like, yeah, it's okay. We'll cover it from the hotel room, which worked out really well for us. It was okay because luckily we have the ability. It's not like you're seeing something that nobody else is seeing, because in the venue, it's not like you can tweet very well. Like Xbox was smart enough to put out cell phone towers and that kind of stuff to give us extra Wi-Fi and all that jazz. So watching it from the comfort of your own home helps. On the show floor, that's a different story, right? People will get the chance to go in and play things, which is good. Stuff that might not be coming out for a year or two, get to see the demos. I'm sure there's still going to be like the behind closed door stuff for the media, the access, the specialty stuff for media people and special meetings and that kind of stuff. But at least folks can go in and check out and see it, because it is like a kid in a candy store. It's like Vegas. It's Vegas for gamers, right? You walk in, bright lights, everything, everywhere. The thing is, the lineups are probably going to be even worse than they were before. You might spend a day and get in two games.
That's what I was going to say, because I remember when we went, it was an industry only event, and the lineups to play games was like 30 minutes to an hour, and like we needed our appointments with the PR people to be able to try everything in the 3 days that we had.
Yeah, that's why like I'm a little bit like, I don't want people to go into this with the wrong idea. Like, if you want to, like, let's say it's like Nintendo this year, or sorry, it's like Nintendo in 2016 where they had the playable demo of Breath of the Wild, you will be standing in line for the entire day.
Yeah, that's the truth.
That's all you will be doing. And it's not even a pretty much thing. That's what you will be doing. You have to get in line as soon as the conference opens. They give you a coin for a certain time slot, and then you have to come back to it. And even then, you have to be in line. It's like, it's very like, unless you have appointments, which you're not going to have if you're just not there as an industry person. So like, I mean, like I said, everyone wants to experience E3, but if you're looking for something that's fan centric and is fan friendly, you're probably better off looking at the PAX closest to you.
Or Comic-Con, or something of the sorts.
Yeah, because Comic-Con
Expo, whatever big convention is by you, you'll have a better experience than flying to LA in the convention center. And downtown LA is not the best part of LA, let's be honest.
It is terribly boring.
Isn't it?
Oh my lord. I got there
5
and I was
PM,
like,
place dies.
I was like, this is empty and boring. I was not what I was expecting at all.
That's the truth. The thing is, too, we've had Nintendo, obviously, they don't do their press conference, but at least they have the booth there at E3. EA's pulled out to do their own event, EA Play. We've got Activision that doesn't do anything on site in the same manner anymore. Disney, I don't believe, does anything in there anymore. So they had to do something to get a draw to get the companies back onto their show floor, because obviously the E3 people are like freaking out, saying like, well, we're having companies not show up, so maybe less maybe less media will show up, that kind of stuff. So they needed to, you know, fill their show floor, and a good way to do that maybe is PlayStation adds an extra few kiosks, and then they let fans in, and that's a good way to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Who knows? Maybe they have, like you said, like maybe they do have changes up their sleeve that will make it more of a fan friendly event. I hope so, because I think it's the experience. It's the quintessential experience.
Everyone wants to go because, yeah, it's the experience of going to E3 and saying you were at E3 that year or whatever. So
yeah, and just a heads up, guys. If you go, E3 itself does not have good merch. So don't go in expecting to get like a cool E3 t-shirt or sweatshirt to show off that you were there. It doesn't happen. Just go for the free swag.
I stop wearing my E3 t-shirt because I'm afraid it's going to fall apart.
Mine's like a bed shirt now.
Yeah. I want to keep the memories forever.
Keep the memories. All right. It's time to jump into our topic of the show, which is actually two interviews. So coming up first, interview with Stuart Chatwood. He is the bassist from the Tea Party and composer of video game soundtracks, including Darkest Dungeon, which was nominated for a slew of awards and won some last year in 2016. So let's jump into it. First, right off the bat, since you're in a rock band and this is not your very first video game soundtrack, you worked on Prince of Persia games, correct?
I did, yeah. We actually, our band got invited to supply music for NHL back in 2000, or maybe 98, actually. And then we had a few songs featured on a Road Rage video game. So
nice.
That was the first exposure to the band anyway. So in 96, though, at Morin Heights, north of Montreal, we were working on an EP with an engineer called Simon Pressy. And Simon was just blown away by our use of world music and just how we actually didn't just sample the instruments. Simon took a job at Ubisoft, I think maybe 1999, and the Prince of Persia game came up across his desk, and he immediately thought of me and he said, would you like to do the music for a video game? And I was like, sure. Let me know where and when. So a year, 2 years passed. Then he called me out of the blue. He's like, all right, we're ready for you to pitch. And I'm like, pitch? What do you mean pitch? I thought you wanted me to do the game. So I was thrown into the pit with all these Hollywood composers, and I had to create a demo from scratch. And just the producers there loved the authenticity. And, you know, when I actually played me some of the stuff from the other composers and just... You know, I was a novice composer at that time, so I didn't think, you know, they'd be picking me, but they just loved my unique approach to things. So, and we worked on three or four major AAA titles and then three or four different little offshoots, you know, for handhelds and different things like that. So it was just a great experience to not only, you know, be involved in the game, which was, you know, the first game was reviewed so well, and the quality of the game, the amount of people working on it, the budget. But just being able to work on such a successful game in terms of the fans, you know. So I kind of got lucky there, you know. I could have worked on some obscure title that got shelved or, you know, something that was horribly reviewed, you know. So, and I think my luck continues because my latest project, I don't know, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I'm working on an indie game that's, you know, won awards and everything now. So I guess I only work on games that are successful. So that's right on my business card number.
Nice. So, go ahead, continue.
Oh, no, it's just, it's been so much fun. You know, I maybe take a different approach to the gaming from some of the other composers. Some of the guys come from TV and just, man, to compose music for TV, I have a lot of respect for the people there, but you just, I treat my music like a relative or something. You know, I have a lot of love and compassion and respect for it. And you just can't do that with some of the mediums. With television, the deadlines are so tight. You basically have to record the first idea that comes into your head.
True.
And then move on. And you polish the turd, basically. Or I can't really do that. I want to create, you know, a masterpiece that stands up to repeated listens and, you know, can stand on its own. You know, so I do have some different approaches, mythologies, whatever, you know, methods of my madness compared to other people. So. Mm-hmm.
Do you find it very different writing for a game versus writing with a Tea Party? Because you're lucky with a Tea Party, you do have that very eclectic world sound going on. And does that help you?
It definitely helps, yeah. I mean, I have such a catalog of songs, and they're not my only projects. I have other projects in addition to those two that you mentioned. But I sort of have a library now, or just I start writing something and I know where the idea is going and who it's for. So anything sort of Middle Eastern, you know, it tends to be for the tea party if it rocks. And if it's more cinematic, then I'll, you know, maybe save it for something, you know, Prince of Persia-esque, I guess.
Cool. And how did you get approached to work on Darkest Dungeon?
That was complete serendipity. I was walking down the street in Vancouver where I live now, and my wife ran into a friend, and the two husbands just stood by and nodded at each other. And, you know, normally I wouldn't say anything, but I just said, you know, what do you do for a living? You know, like mm-hmm. I said, oh, I make video games. And I said, I make music for video games. So he showed me some artwork of a game he was working on. And, you know, I was ready to write it off before I even looked at the screen, but his artwork was just incredible. And it was for the Darkest Dungeon. And just reminded me of Hieronymus Bosch. It was dark. It was brooding. It was like, I could write music for that. You know, I knew right away. So I said, let's work together. So we get along well socially as well. This was Tyler Sigmund and his partner, Chris Barassa. So both former, you know, AAA type title guys from Vancouver who just struck out on their own. They decided that, all right, we're not going to make any money for 3 years. Our wives are going to support us. And then we're going to see what happens. And I really admired their dogmatic just approach to the purity of the RPG game they created. They didn't want to, you know, sort of sprinkle on too much script or story behind it. They just wanted a pure gaming experience. So it did rely a lot on music to set the mood, the artwork to set the mood. And then that game, if you've played it, I don't know if you have, but just the narration, some of the greatest narration in video game history, in my opinion. Like, I can't believe it's not a video game. Like, you hear this guy talk and you're like, I gotta get that guy on my alarm clock in the morning, you know?
Oh, he belongs on radio.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. So Wayne June is his name, so very talented guy. But he does read Lovecraft novels.
Oh, there you go.
Very Lovecraftian. So it was like right as that on you. And the producers, the creators were just so gung-ho about using him, you know, and just the scripted, you know, lines are just incredible.
What inspiration did you use for the soundtrack?
A lot of things. I mean, I am a gamer going back to the 70s myself, so I watched different incarnations, different platforms and all that. I did love the, oh my God, I'm going to draw a blank here. I've been sick the last couple of days, so I'm not high on medicine.
I'm sick right now, so yeah, my voice is totally shot.
Oh, Diablo.
This is working. Diablo. Oh, yes, Diablo.
So I love the soundtrack. Just some of these soundtracks, they just stick with you over the years. I mean, that soundtrack, I don't know, 20 years old now? It's quite old, you know? The one with the guitar and just how they used it, things like that. That was one of the references. And then the Hammer horror film, you know, all the horror films from Vincent Price and what's his name? Who just, oh God, getting the actor, or Peter, Peter Cushing maybe? Yeah, maybe. The guy played the guy in Star Wars.
Oh,
he was just
yes.
in Rogue One. He was reanimated.
Right.
Yeah, he was in a lot of these Hammer horror films. Christopher Lee as well. He was in a lot of these movies. But just they had some soundtracks. Dark Shadows, actually, an old 60s TV show, was another point of reference. I'm trying to think some of the other points of reference for this one. But Chris, one of the guy that did the illustration, he was a big fan of industrial music too. So it was nice. I like industrial music myself. So it wasn't too much of a stretch.
You can hear a bit of that in it too, because you can hear twangs that kind of sound like they come from 8-bit, but they're not that distorted.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I haven't done an 8-bit soundtrack yet, so that might be a challenge for the future, trying to create a moody 8-bit piece.
Next project.
Yeah, for sure.
So one thing that I really like about this game is, of course, it takes into account, you know, your health and all that kind of stuff, but stress level. Stress level is something that hasn't really been played with in video games very much, but Darkest Dungeon really, really grabs onto that. And stress level is a key factor in the gameplay. And I totally get it in your music. How did you build stress into the score?
Into the score?
Yeah.
I think just normally I'm a dramatic person. When I like write cues, they're really quite dramatic anyway. So I did play the game quite a bit. Like in beta testing, I was like 40, 50 hours into the game. And I actually, they're like, wow, you've actually done a lot of playing. Because the game, I think you can play a couple hundred hours in this game. You
know, oh, easy.
Some of the AAA titles are, you know, 16, 20 hour games and full of excitement, of course. But yeah. The stress is permanent too. I mean, you can self-flagellate and do different things to lower it, but you know, that meter in the game creeps up quite quickly. and the idea of permadeath as well, you know, and myself, I might reach for the power quickly to try and stop the hard drive from writing the permadeath. But yeah, just, I just hit right from the get-go. Some of the feedback from Chris, you know, just the artist, everything you see in the game was pretty well drawn by Chris's hand. So he's so intertwined with every nuance in the game. So I relied a lot on his feedback. So we had a great symbiotic relationship the way that worked out.
And the sound effects really fit with the music as well. Did you know what the sound effects were going to sound like at the same time? Because they really, like, they mesh.
Yeah, Power Up Audio in Vancouver, they did a great job. Yeah, just everything about it. It's just so slick, this game. You know, I'm so honored to have my music in with Wayne's narration, Power Up Audio, sound effects. And just, it was nice this year. It finally got some of the recognition and some of the year-end voting.
Yeah,
that's for an indie game. So, yeah.
Yeah, you got nominated for Best Soundtrack of the Year on the PlayStation blog for 2016. And the game won the 2016 Vita Game of the Year on IGN. That must feel real good.
Oh, for sure. And then PC Gamer, I think, picked it as the RPG of the year. And just, you know I've been on the other side. I've been on the AAA side. So I have seen the 150 people programming on floor in Ubisoft at 2 a.m, you know. So I know what can go into these highly crafted Prince of Persia, you know, Assassin's Creed type games. So for us to be able to do it with just a great idea and purity and, you know, top-notch artwork as well that, you know, it's not 30 frames per second animation or, you know, cutting edge 3D technology. You know, it was like, the game sold itself on other attributes. So just rewarding now. Yeah. Just sticking to the idea, the purity of the RPG title, you know, so.
Is there anything you learned from making the score for this game that you'd take on to the next one?
Well, I mean, time is a luxury in scoring. And so often you're given, especially in, the cinematics, like the movie cut scenes of some of these AAA titles, you're the last person to see it. And you have the tightest deadline at the end. They've been working on this movie cut scene for 6 months. You've seen a bunch of blocks and triangles go across, and then you get somewhat of a decent resolution that can tell the story of this film. And then it's like, we need the music in 2 days. And, you know, you want something. I mean, myself, I want music that will last forever. So a lot of composers take the approach where the music, if it is heard and remembered, you haven't really done your job. You've taken away from the action on the screen. But for me, I love nothing more than to leave the movie theater humming the music. You know, whether it's the Empire March, you know, whatever, from Star Wars or whatever, you know. So, I mean, that's my approach. And, different strokes for different people, you know. So, but yeah, time though. Like, I've been lucky in this game just to be able to write the stuff, to live with it, to revisit it. And, you know, hopefully it shows, you know, like in terms of the longevity of the melody, you know, hopefully the music won't date itself too quickly. So.
Awesome. And are you working on any video game projects right now that you're allowed to talk about?
Yeah, I can talk about, there's download content coming for Darkest Dungeon.
Nice. So
that's, yeah, I think they created a new version of the game that gave players the option to make the game a little easier and not as grindy, because in the higher levels it gets quite grindy. So they're just rolling that out right now, and they really take care of their bugs at that game too. So the Darkest Dungeon people, the Red Hook Studio people. So we're not rushing out the DLC until that's ready as well. So probably April or May, people can look for that. But I'm in the middle of the tour right now. So I've got a couple of laptops on the road and they're loaded up with samples. So it's interesting. You know, you'll see me in a hotel room working away with, you know, different, quite an elaborate setup for a hotel room. So
that's kind of cool that you can do game music scoring on the go while touring.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I love, you know, before it's delivered, I'll head back to my studio and do a proper mix in a proper isolated room and everything like that. But yeah, I mean, it's great, you know, being able to do stuff nowadays, you know, on the road.
Awesome. And of course, if folks want to follow you, how can they track you down to follow what you're doing? And of course, the tea party's on tour. So,
yeah. So, I mean, for myself, I will have a better website soon, but just stuartchatwood.com, but probably Facebook has the most up-to-date information. So I think it's Stuart Chatwood Official on Facebook. Sorry for not knowing that exactly. And then teaparty.com or Tea Party Band, I think it's been changed to now on Facebook. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for chatting with me. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, good luck. Take care.
Next, we got an interview with Colin Wong. He does PR and esports for Asus Canada.
Being a computer hardware company, obviously it's a big thing for you guys to be involved in esports. Where do you think is Asus's placement in the grand scheme of things for esports?
So if you're familiar with Asus, we actually have two brands. So there's Asus and then there's the Republic of Gamers brand. ROG is what we're going to be really focusing on and pushing gaming in globally, not just in Canada. So ROG in Canada, we have been involved over the past couple of years with all the major gaming events and tournaments from DreamHack Montreal. We were the official PC hardware provider for Northern Arena. We work closely with LAN ETS, EGLX out in Toronto, and we do a lot of small community events as well.
Esports is really in its infancy here in Canada. What do you think is the projected growth in our country for esports, and Asus is part in it?
In my opinion, for esports in general, I think there's a huge market for it. There's a huge appetite for it in Canada, which is why you see a lot more events happening, a lot more tournament, like the emergence of Northern Arena. Before all these events, like a couple years back, there wasn't really much. It was just like your small casual LAN parties with maybe a couple hundred people. But now we're starting to see a lot more events where we're hitting like the couple thousands, and that's huge for Canada. We're starting to catch up to kind of like the US level, where we have these big exhibitions and lots of vendors coming with big booths and giving just a whole crazy production value and everything. How ROG fits into it though is our products are really well known for gaming. We've been in the gaming industry for over 10 years. Last year was actually our 10th year anniversary for gaming. And we are able to cover all hardware components from motherboards, graphics card, peripherals, laptops, desktop monitors, you name it, we got it. And that's where we fit in the great like esports grand scheme of things, because we can able to provide our premium products for all the game users to experience with.
How many different events do you partake in, like for 2017? Do you have a number of how many? You guys think, I know you do LAN ETS. I imagine you're going to be doing DreamHack again. If Northern Arena comes back, you'd be involved in that as well?
So right now for 2017, we just have LAN ETS planned. Everything else is still in plans and process. But to give you an example, last year we participated in Northern Arena, LAN ETS, DreamHack, EGLX, and a bunch of small community events. So hopefully we can continue our partnerships in 2017.
So do you guys find it welcoming in those events as a hardware company?
Definitely. A lot of these events, how we work with them is they depend on us for our equipment. So by being official hardware providers, we're able to provide them like top of the line gaming gear from monitors to desktops that are at the professional level to give them the perfect experience for them to run their tournament smoothly. And they always get great feedback from them saying, we love your products. All the players competing love your products. We have no complaints, and they always just love working with us.
And is a good business to consumer chance for you to get people to get hands-on with your gear as well?
Yeah, for sure. We always have booth activations at these events. And what we do in our booth activations, we like to show off our latest devices from laptops to desktops to monitors. And how we will engage with our fans is we'll have the latest games. We can do mini competitions in our booth. So in the past, we had pro gamers come out and do like 1v1 CSGO competitions, so pro versus Joe matches. And the fans love that because they're just kind of meeting their esports celebrity and just getting the chance to engage with their fans. So it's not only about showing off our products, which is one thing, but it's also giving back to the community and showing how involved we are, and the community just loves it.
Sweet. So women in esports, or lack thereof, has been a major topic along with the growth of the competition in Canada. How do you feel Asus is helping get women behind the keyboard and mice?
So for one example, we actually do sponsor a Twitch streamer named Pokemon. She's a League of Legends Twitch streamer, Pokemon, and we actually sponsor her. And she's a really popular League of Legends Twitch streamer that's under the ROG stream team right now. So we do make a diversify like partnerships with all types of gamers. We don't really only focus on one. So we do help grow and just kind of grow the community overall.
Do you think there's one game that's really going to blow up in Canada more so than another?
Right now, I think CSGO is really heavily focused in Montreal. I think CSGO is a really strong fan.
We've got some local heroes, that's why.
Yeah, such as Miss Harvey.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's really strong. Out west, League of Legends, I heard, is really popular out in Vancouver.
Cool.
So I can see Dota 2 maybe taking or even Overwatch picking up there is really strong as well.
But yeah, have you seen much Overwatch talk? like folks coming to you guys, particularly kit hardware that will do well for Overwatch players, things like that?
So last year, we were actually one of the main partners at BlizzCon as well.
Nice.
So part of the Overwatch tournament that they did, they used all our monitors. So not only are we really involved in the Canadian community, but as a whole, like global approach, we are very involved in the global gaming community. So at PAX, DreamHack, BlizzCon, and like ECS and all that stuff, we're involved in the US perspective as well.
Cool. So we're speaking today because obviously Aces is part of LAN ETS here in Montreal. What do you guys do for the event?
We're one of the main partners at LAN ETS this year. What that includes is the main stage is going to be brought to you by ROG. So it's going to be all decked out ROG, and all the competitions we're going to be run on our G20 compact gaming desktop and our PG248Q gaming monitor. We'll also have a booth on site, which we will be running tournaments in, 1v1 matches, and just letting people test our products and kind of engaging with the community, because I think that's a really important factor for us.
I've seen Republic of Gamers and Asus at many esports events myself. What has the reaction been for your team in how Canadian gaming community is gravitating towards esports?
Definitely folks have been very welcoming. There's always a huge appetite for gaming. Like after one major event to another, you can just see the audience reaction wanting more and more, more games, more events, more tournaments. And just they just want it everywhere, like not just in the big three cities, Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto. They want to spread it across Canada. So there are events happening in Winnipeg and like Newfoundland and stuff like that, but they still aren't as big as the big three in Canada. But there is an appetite in Canada for these events, and we do find the crowd is really receptive of this.
And in 2017, what's coming up for Asus and Republic of Gamers? New hardware?
So in 2017, there's definitely got to be a lot of stuff from hardware. At CES, we launched a bunch of different desktops, new laptops, but you'll definitely be seeing more involvements with the esports community, and especially at the competitive level. I don't know if you heard, but during CES, we actually made an announcement that we're the official hardware provider for Echo Fox.
Nice.
So that's a huge announcement for us. So we're going to be working a lot more with streamers, influencers, gamers, and just overall community approach.
And do you guys tap that resource for R&D? To be able to test your gear, to get like direct feedback from esports players to know what their needs are in order to develop your gear?
Yep. So under ROG, we actually have like two different lines of products. There's ROG and then there's ROG Strix. How we define ROG Strix is they're kind of like the more esports competitive gaming products, like the laptops that you'll see that are more portable. But then we also target not only gamers, but the enthusiasts. So like the DIY builders, the hardcore like Liquid Cool and Liquid Nitrogen, and just like doing all those like testings and all those speed tests, right? So those are the hardcore tech enthusiasts where we use the ROG brand to kind of approach them. And those guys are heavily involved in the forums. We actually have people in the forums listening to feedback, and we design based on their feedback to meet the customer needs.
That's great. And where can people learn more about Asus and Republic of Gamers and all the stuff that you guys are involved with in esports?
You can definitely learn more about Republic of Gamers at rogarena.com. And to find out where you can purchase Asus product, just visit asus.com/ca.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, and that pretty much closes out our show. As always, we want to thank our wonderful sponsor, Fun.io, who does our web hosting. If you're looking for website hosting of any sorts, go check them out. Stream schedule. Simon, what's on the go?
Hello.
So, it's actually going to be pretty quiet this week. We usually have the lovely Callis on Tuesday. That should be good. We usually have the lovely Julie on Wednesday. Unfortunately, she's going to be at KatsuCon.
Ooh.
Yes, she's going to be doing all sorts of awesome cosplay, so she won't be there next week. And then we have Bianca Friday as always, and we might have something special on the weekend.
Ooh, something special.
So we'll see what happens.
Special.
Maybe me, maybe on a different platform. Who knows what's going to happen?
We'll see. Stay tuned.
Yes.
The Girls on Games on Twitter for all that info.
Indeed.
Website highlights. Kat, what's on the go?
We have art examination with Miss Bianca Dunk, who's one of our streamer. She did a series examining art in video games. So the first one we've got is Lara Croft Go, and it's titled Boldness in Simplicity. So if you're both an art and a video game nerd, you'll love this one. Also, we compared the new gamer blocks, the M for mature versus the E for everyone, so formerly known as arcade block. We're looking at these rebranded subscription boxes to see if it's worth it or if there's one of them that's better. And also, Dragon Quest VIII, Journey of the Cursed King PS2 game came to the 3DS, if you can find a console to play it on. So we review this game. And fun story, it's not a remaster like Dragon Quest VII. It's a straight up port. Oh. That means the 3DS can run PS2 games, which beckons the question, why aren't we seeing it more? More classic PS2 games on our 3DSs. We love it.
Is it owned by Sony?
What?
Not all of them.
No, but a lot of them.
No, Dragon Quest is Square Enix. And that's it for website highlights. And as usual, if you're interested in a game, we probably reviewed it. We probably talked about it. So use that little search bar at the top.
Thanks, Kat. And as always, I want to thank everybody who's on the panel here with me today. Kat, how can people find you on social media?
I am CSDESBINS, CSDBA, on Twitter, Instagram, Nintendo ID, PS, Xbox Live. I'm that everywhere. Find me.
Ellie, how can people track you down?
Everybody can find me as 8BitBlonde pretty much everywhere on the internet. Twitter, Instagram, Xbox, all that good stuff.
And last but not least, Simon.
Hello. I wish I was as consistent on all my platforms as you girls are, because I'm all over the fucking place.
I'm not.
I'm GOG Simon M on Twitter, and I am 42X on Xbox, and that's it pretty much.
Cool. And I'm Leah Jewer on most social media, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And then, yeah, Xbox, GOG Leah, PlayStation, AYU560. But of course, you want to know and follow everything that is Girls on Games. So you can track us down on Facebook and Twitter at The Girls on Games. We're on Instagram at Girls on Games. If you want to come chat with us, we're on Discord. That's discord.me/Girls on Games. Come say hi. But of course, everything you need to know is on our home base. That is our website, girlsongames.ca. Thank y'all for hanging out on this panel. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you all next week. Happy gaming.
Bye. Bye.